Let me introduce John Terpstra. John Terpstra is a long-time Samba team member. He's currently working for Caldera, and he's looking after the packaging stuff of Samba so that the RPMs are built flawlessly when you download your package. And I hope this notebook will work. John is going to talk about performance measurements and benchmarking with Samba on and Windows NT.
Thank you, Volker. Okay, it's going to take a couple of moments to come up. I'm presenting from OpenOffice today. How many of you use OpenOffice? That's good to see a few hands up there. Of course, like so many of these big applications, they take a long time to come up. Okay. I've been looking after various aspects of Samba packaging ever since the Samba team was formed. And a lot of questions come my way because my name is and email address is in various parts of Samba. Over the last 12 months or so in particular, I have had many emails asking if I have a Windows 2000 server that does that serves my purposes now, what resources do I need in order to run Samba? Those requests often come in various forms because it seems that people in the Linux community have fairly strong opinions about what sort of hardware they ought to use and how much money their organizations should be prepared to spend on the equipment. So after polling a number of people, a consensus was reached, or the most popular number I was given is, how much performance can money buy if I spend $2,500 US on my server, and what sort of resources, how much memory do I need, what sort of disk do I need? In looking around and in speaking with people, I received general feedback that you need good solid disk I.O. You need lots of disk I.O. bandwidth. And the most popular device that was recommended to me was a three-ware IDE RAID controller because you can stick very cost-effective hard disks into the machine. I might add that I spoke with a reseller based out of Sacramento in California who is shipping boxes that have many 120 gigabyte or 160 gigabyte IDE drives sitting off a three-way RAID controller for various purposes, and he too was looking at deploying Samba into a site that had been using Windows 2000. So the questions that I've attempted to address, and I want to state right up front, I am not happy that I've addressed the questions I started with. I ran out of time. But I have learnt a lot in the process of doing this work. So how does Samba compare with Windows 2000 Advanced Server? What resources should be provided for Windows 2000 Advanced Server? What resources should be provided for Samba? I'm going to bore you with the findings first and then the details. That way, if you happen to go to sleep as you're looking at the details, you won't have missed anything. So the first thing is that Samba scales almost linearly with the number of microprocessors you have on your machine. More microprocessors means more performance. That's the first rule I came up with. Going from comparing at a $2,500 price point, US, and I'll show you the machine configurations that are roughly equivalent. A dual processor AMD MP1500 machine costs almost the same amount of money to build as a Pentium 4 machine using RAM bus memory. And hands up those who believe that RAM bus memory is much faster than PC133 or than DDR memory. Oh, I see. No one wants to be bitten on that one. Secondly, there is a widespread belief that gigabit Ethernet is the way to go. Who would believe that? Well, you should all believe that, okay? And the other thing is that IDE RAID really does improve performance. But let's try to get a fix on it and where the performance benchmarks sit. And the other thing that I'd like to just convey to you is, how many of you run Linux on a Pentium 4 system? Right, keep your hands up. How many of you are running it on a Pentium 4 system that happens to have an Intel 82850 chipset on it? I can tell you now, none of you, unless you are running a 2417 or later kernel, or else you would be cursing the machine for periodically just spontaneously rebooting. And that was one of the challenges that I had during the benchmarking, because one of the things that I could reproduce was running, and one of the requests was, if I run version X of Linux, I'm not going to tell you what version X of Linux was, but the moment the NetBench test for 32 clients would start up, about 10 to 12 seconds into the test, the machine would magically reboot. It was very reproducible. It was a pain. Okay, more findings. Windows 2000, Advanced Server, Service Pack 2, with the Service Release 2 patch. That was the very latest on March the 12th and the 13th, when Herb Lewis of the Samba team allowed us access into the NetBench test lab at SGI, and we started to do this work. And what we were looking for, first of all, we ran a few rough tests to try to determine how we should run the tests. We ran out of time trying to do that. But what we were doing is monitoring how Windows 2000 Advanced Server was chewing up its resources as we were loading the machine up with the NetBench test. Now, the SGI lab has 60 Windows NT workstations that we were using as clients using the NetBench test 7.0.2. And what we discovered, after we got about 32 clients up, we were able to identify, starting with no clients, what the baseline total memory commit charge for Windows 2000 was in the task monitor. Then we looked at what our peak memory usage was during the process of the NetBench test. From 32 to 48 to 60 clients, the difference between the total memory commit charge before connecting any clients and with the clients present at peak load, that we divided by the number of clients, and that is that magic 300 kilobytes per NetBench client. The other thing that we did, that Herb did before we ever started these tests, is he looked at the file system performance, and Herb identified that Windows 2000 gives far better performance benchmarks if you run that off a FAT file system than off an NTFS file system. Well, we didn't want to play that game. We decided to use NTFS right up front. And the difference is quite substantial. I don't have the graphs here, but I'll ask Herb to make them available. Samba on Linux, by comparison, the way that we established what the memory consumption was by taking the difference between the runtime stack size and the amount of memory that's shared. And that is almost consistently around 450 kilobytes per client. So therefore, if we're using 450 kilobytes per client and we want to run a system with 1,000 Microsoft Windows clients hanging off a Linux system running Samba, how much memory will that take? Well, that's only 460 megabytes of memory. That's nothing today. We were running with machines that had a gigabyte of memory. So therefore, memory usage today is not terribly important. It's cheap enough to throw more memory at the machine. The other thing we discovered is that EXT2 gives radically better performance than Riser FS, which gives radically better performance than EXT3FS. And I'll show you what some of those performance curves look like.
John, did you try SGI's XFS?
No, I did not try XFS or IBM's JFS, both of which, after I started the work, were suggested we should have tried. And I have one answer to that. I shouldn't do any productive work, I just should keep benchmarking. The other thing that we discovered is that for an equivalently resourced machine, that is exactly the same machine running Windows 2000 Advanced Server compared with what you can do with that machine running Samba on Linux with a 2.4.18 or later kernel, we get about four times the number of clients that we can support. Now, that's not new information. How many of you saw the article on itweek.co.uk last week? Okay, we need to publish that on our website if it's not already. And you should have a look at it, because we've had a tremendous write-up.
There's a link from Linux Today. If you look at Linux Today and search for Samba.
There's a link from Linux Today if you search for Samba. It's a really good study. It gives some very nice, very independent figures about Samba. Whoops. So let's have a look at at the machines that we used. The client machine that I used was a Pentium 4S machine AMD MP1500 with 512 megabyte of DDR RAM, dual MP1500 CPUs on a Tian 2642 motherboard with a MaxStor 5400 RPM IDE drive, 40 gigabytes capacity. Intel for the AMD provided the other machine. I purchased and built this one, but Intel provided gigabit Ethernet cards for us. We've had quite a number of companies who have been more than willing to give us hardware to work with. Threeware gave us a RAID controller to work with, which I do need to return. I'd love to keep that. It's a nice controller. I was running Caldera Open Linux 3.1.1 with a 2.4.18 kernel, the Alan Cox version 3 patch, the Best Bits extended attribute and access control list patches, although Samba had been compiled on a machine that did not have that. So we weren't looking at that. We weren't trying to use it. And we used this machine as the point of origin for D-Bench, T-Bench, and SMB torture tests, and nothing else. It was purely the machine from which we launched the, you might say, attack on the target hardware. The test machines were an AMD 1500 dual processor, 1 gigabyte of memory, DDR memory, Tian TK7 motherboard, with a removable disk pack. We were replacing the hard disks. I'll describe those in a moment. We're using gigabit Ethernet for all of the test work and 100 megabit Ethernet for all of the control work. So all of the control connections between the two, all of the monitoring, was done remote from the channel over which we were doing any of the test work. We had an Intel P4 machine with an A-bit T87 RAID motherboard with all the RAID functionality turned off, with a 1500 megahertz Pentium 4 CPU, that's one of the original big Pentium 4 chips, with 1 gigabyte of RAM bus memory on it. Very expensive, very fiddly memory, but there you go, that's what we put together, and we used a gigabit controller and a 100 megabit controller. The, hang on, which one did I hit there? Okay, that down one. We also had an Intel Pentium 4S machine with an Intel 845WB motherboard, 1600 megahertz Pentium 4 processor with 640 megabytes of PC133 memory, a removable disk pack, and the same basic configuration. So what I want you to imagine is here we had a range of four machines that we could actually test, and we had one set of disks that we migrated to each machine. There's a slight problem with that. Linux works fine, but Windows 2000 Advanced Server was installed on the original Pentium 4 with a gigabit RAM, and that could not be run up on any other machine. It would have required reinstallation. And in the end, I ran out of time to do that. The removable disk packs consisted of a MacStore 5400 RPM IDE drive, on which was installed only Open Linux. We had a Western Digital 7200 RPM drive, on which was installed Windows 2000 Advanced Server, Open Linux 3.1.1, and SUSE 8.0. Really, the version of Linux does not matter. It is the kernel and how you configure it and how you configure the hardware that matters. After all, Linux is Linux. And we had a three-way IDE RAID controller that was used purely as a target machine, configured with three Western Digital 7200 drives on it, 360 gigabyte drives, partitioned into four areas: a Windows 2000 NTFS file system, an EXT2 file system, EXT3 file system, and a Ryza file system on it. And that was the target that was used for all the performance metrics on the three-way controller. Now, the first problem that we ran into was that we had very pathetic I.O. throughput on early testing. So in the end, what I did is I got the AMD machine, by the way, both AMD machines had a 64-bit PCIX slot on it, and the gigabit Ethernet card was a 64-bit card that you can either use in a 32-bit PCI slot or in the 64-bit PCI slot. And what I was trying to establish is, what is the difference between running that card with a direct cable connection in between them? What is the difference between 32-bit PCI and 64-bit PCI? And basically, the Soclib utility that Andrew wrote pumps raw TCP/IP data through the connection, and we were looking at the overall number of megabytes per second we could clock. And I was looking at the optimum buffer size for the socket calls, and we were adjusting that from half a kilobyte up to 128 kilobytes. The lower curve, can you see that all right there? Oops. Oh, dear. There. Hit the wrong button here. I hit the end and it went straight to the end. Whoa! Okay. So after we found the... I'll just go back one again. The maximum throughput we were able to get the 32-bit PCI that was on the Pentium 4 S1600 machine was around the 76 megabytes per second. Going to the 64-bit PCI gives you about an extra 20% throughput at about 90 megabytes a second. I was hoping to get more. Andrew now tells me, well, that's not really too bad. Is that right, Andrew? Okay, then we're looking at the T-Bench, that's a TCP/IP, running the NetBench test without any disk I.O., looking purely at TCP/IP protocol stack performance. And in this case, we were looking at the maximum throughput we could hit with whatever number of clients. And that's going from the AMD dual processor client machine to the AMD dual processor target machine. And we peaked at 70 megabytes per second at 50 clients. Now, there are some rumors around that these sort of benchmarks scale about 10 to 1 for the real world. So if you believe the rumor, which I don't because I haven't been able to prove it yet, but if you believe that, that means we should be able to get peak performance with about 500 average users running off one of these dual processor AMD MP1500 machines.
John, could you talk a bit more about the separation of the NetBench code? Because I think that not everybody is familiar with that.
Okay, I'll try to tackle that. Andrew is going to help me out there a little bit in a moment, because he's the guy who wrote it. But basically, Ziff Davis wrote a benchmarking toolkit called NetBench. It measures, it runs a certain number of operations. It appears that what Ziff Davis did is they profiled what certain business applications do over the network, and they try to emulate that in a particular way. Andrew is far better equipped to discuss that, so I'll ask him to do that.
Thanks, John. As some of you may remember, a few years back, there was the Minecraft benchmarks. And any of you here remember the Minecraft benchmarks? There was a lot of fuss about them a few years back. There were some benchmarks which were published by a benchmarking company called Minecraft. The company was sponsored by Microsoft to write the articles and the analysis, and Microsoft chose which data to publish, etc. That's the normal practice in benchmarking. It's fairly scummy, but it's normal practice. Anyway, Samba performed very, very badly. One of the reasons that Microsoft sponsored these benchmarks was just before this, PC Week had published results showing Samba doing very, very well compared to Windows at benchmarks. And so Minecraft was contracted by Microsoft to produce results where Samba did badly. Now, this was quite valuable because, in fact, Samba on Linux was performing very badly on the particular machine configurations that were being used in that case, the quad CPU machines with a particular arrangement of the hardware. Now, the problem for the open source community, for Samba and for the Linux community, was improving these results, not just discrediting Minecraft, but actually getting these results better on this particular hardware combination. But we couldn't do that very easily because there were only three or four laboratories in the world that could run this benchmark, because there are only a few labs that had the order of $250,000 worth of hardware required to run these very large NetBench runs. They weren't generally accessible to the community. So what we did was, what I did at the time, I wrote an emulation of these benchmarks. I captured the benchmarks using a sniffer to disk and produced a number of tools that will emulate the packets on the wire that NetBench produces, allowing anyone to that downloads these tools to run their own NetBench runs with only Linux boxes, no Windows boxes involved. The tools that were produced are called DBench, TBench, and the SMB Torture NBench test. DBench simulates just the disk I/O of a NetBench run, TBench just the TCP/IP of the NetBench run, and the NBench simulates the full all the SMB transactions. It turned out that the bottleneck was not Samba, it was the Linux kernel. The Linux kernel coders, in particular Ingo, Linus, David Miller, and a few others, then worked particularly with DBench to improve the performance of Linux on DBench, and vast improvements were made over a period of a few months. In fact, the improvements, it was about a factor of 4 or 5 times improvement in the DBench performance in just a few months' effort. And to this day, if you look on the Linux kernel mailing list, the DBench results are still used regularly to look at the performance of the Linux kernel for Samba. Those are the same benchmarks that John has now been running. So really it's an example of the open source community attacking a problem by reverse engineering an existing commercial benchmark or semi-commercial benchmark, proprietary benchmark, and providing that benchmark for use by anyone in the community, which then allowed the problem to be tackled by anyone with a single PC rather than requiring a large amount of resources. So I think it's quite a good example of the open source community responding to a performance bottleneck using open source techniques.
Thank you, Andrew. So let's move on and have a look at a few more graphs. I've got plenty of pretty pictures. What they mean, that's open to question. Now here we are looking at the DBench results on the MP1500 machine with a 5400 RPM Mac Store IDE drive in it. And what you see is the sudden death rate. I'm going to pull my pointer and hope it doesn't move on. There we go. We achieve maximum throughput at two clients, the equivalent of two clients. So we run this test with as many pseudo clients as we specify, and we basically hit our peak at four and then died pretty sharply after that. Our peak throughput was at nearly 375 megabytes per second. And all of the figures that I'm reporting here, I'm using megabytes per second, not megabits per second, which is what the NetBench test suite normally produces. So later on when I show you NetBench, understand I've converted the NetBench net megabits to megabytes per second. Here is what happens when we run DBench on the MP1500 on different drives. Here we're running on an EXT2FS drive, and in this particular case, we get a massive peak on the 5400 RPM drive, and then it starts to die off. Now, in discussing this with Andrew, I've become aware of the fact that what I should have done was used HD Palm to check to see how DMA is set and to see whether we're using 32-bit I/O or not and drive caching or not. And those things make make an enormous difference to IDE drive performance. I want to be very clear about it. I took the drives as they came, ran them up, and did not do anything scientific. Now I know that one needs to be a lot more scientific next time. I might add that Herb Lewis and I spent two full days from 7 o'clock in the morning till way after dark. I don't want to say how late it was. We're all in trouble. So we spent 2 days on that, and I spent probably another week on just trying to get these results together. It takes a lot of time to do this properly, and you do have to pay the price in the benchmarking area. You have to pay your initial pennies so you learn how to do it properly, and I'm telling you, I learnt the hard way how to do this properly the next time. So what this shows us is that running off the RAID controller, we basically have what is an in-kernel, in-memory bottleneck of about 425 megabytes per second, which is a massive throughput, far more than we can pump over Ethernet, and therefore the assumption that we're moving on is that disk I/O is not the bottleneck in designing your average solution. But if you are using a raw drive, and you do not have a mechanism for getting really fast I/O, then you are going to pay a price, and the price you pay is a performance fall-off as you get contention of multiple clients wanting to perform different I/O operations. We did the same thing with EXT3FS. Notice that the 5400 RPM drive actually outperformed the RAID controller. I have no way to explain that, and really I would suggest that probably these tests should be repeated under more controlled circumstances. But it is fairly clear, given that the overall maximums are substantially lower for the RAID drive, that the EXT3FS journaling file system has a much higher processing overhead than EXT2 has. And there's obvious room for improvement either in the design of the file system or in how the tests are run. And again, I really don't want to get bogged down into the details of that. We only ran the RiserFS performance comparisons on the 7200 RPM drive and the RAID drive. And you can see there that there is also, as with EXT3, a fairly sharp fall off as the drive hits contention. We then ran SMB torture using the NBench test, targeting that at the Pentium 4S 1600 megahertz machine with a 5400 RPM IDE drive. And as part of the NBench DBench code that you can download off the CVS website, there are two files in there, one called client underbar plane and the other called client underbar oplex, oplox, both .txt. And I'm going to ask Andrew to explain again what the difference between those two is, because the names are somewhat confusing.
They're load files captured in SMBD, the Samba main file serving daemon, from real NetBench runs. That's how we create the NetBench simulator, dbench, tbench, and SMB torture. We capture the calls that are done against a real Samba server by a NetBench, real NetBench clients. You can capture it with a number of different settings on the server. These settings involve with or without oplocks enabled on the server. Oplocks is a mechanism in SMB for doing aggressive client-side caching, coherent client-side caching. And by enabling or disabling oplocks, you get quite a different set of I/O patterns happening on the server. So by running with the two different files, you can see what the effect of client-side caching would be in your performance, the difference between the two.
The two tests are quite are very different. The client plane test passes a total of about 240 megabytes of data per client over the network, whereas the client underbar oplocks code passes about 348 megabytes of data over the network per client. Did you want to say something there, Jeremy? So what you can see there is that those two different tests give substantially different performance, and we peaked with the client underbar oplocks code at about 37.5 megabytes per second, and that's off the IDE drive, which actually has a performance limit of 37 megabytes per second according to MaxStor. So that's pretty close to the absolute limit of what the drive could pump out. So we decided to run with the client underbar oplocks NBench test for the next few graphs, and what we have there is the NBench test run from the AMD client machine to the AMD dual processor machine with the RAID file, so the RAID backend, running it off three separate file systems on that RAID backend. One with EXT2FS, one with EXT3FS, and the other with RiserFS. And we learnt by this time that it is imperative that for each test run you do, you have to completely reformat the file system. You need to unmount it, reformat it, and start with exactly the same conditions each time, or else you cannot reproduce the test. Additionally, I mentioned to Andrew yesterday, the first time you run it, you get quite a good result. The second and third time you run it, you get appalling results. The fourth, fifth, and sixth time you run it, you get almost the same results, and they're a little bit higher than the first time. So the way that I took my numbers here is I took of the six runs for each of the client measurement points, I took the highest measurement that I was able to get. This is not off a single run. This is the highest of the six runs done. And they take about somewhere between anything from 30 seconds up to half an hour each to run. So you can imagine how patient you have to be to get these numbers. The variation can be very wide. So I kept on going until I got reasonably consistent high numbers. So the top curve there is for the EXT2 file system, and that peaked at about just under 42.5 megabytes a second, 42.3 or so. The next curve down is for RiserFS, and I stopped at 20 clients for EXT3. I just ran out of time to do that. Now, looking at the real NetBench 702 figures that we pulled out of the SGI test lab, and again, I fiddled with the numbers. I fiddled with them in that whatever perform, as you run the NetBench test, it is possible for clients to die. And the NetBench test reports the number of clients that actually survived the test. If we lost more than one or two clients, we discounted that result and ran again. So what I then did is that whatever survived, I normalized that for the number of clients. So if we were running with 48 and we actually got the result for 46 clients, I multiplied that by 48 over 46. Do you follow what I'm saying? So those are the curves that otherwise the curves look really awful. Not that these don't look awful. But you can see here that Windows 2000 Advanced Server runs particularly poorer in total throughput than what Samba on Linux will run. And here is the same performance running off Open Linux Server 3.1.1 on the AMD machine, but with the 2.4.18 kernel. And again, I want to stress, it's not the breed of Linux that matters. It's the kernel and how the system is configured that matters more than anything else. What we have here at the top is EXT2, then RiserFS, and then EXT3FS again. And again, we hit about 43 megabytes per second at 30 clients. Now, I'm afraid that that's about all I have to show you. I hope it was interesting to you. I want to say a special thanks to Herb Lewis at SGI, to Richard Sharp of the Samba team for helping out, for Andrew and Jeremy, who have been plagued incessantly over this, for Mark Miller of AMD for making a machine available, for Peter Grass of 3Ware for making the controller card available, to Intel for providing the gigabit card. All of these people want to see this presentation. And to Andrew Tridgell and the rest of the team. And if you have any questions, I'll take them, but I might duck also.
Questions. I'd like to make one comment about SMB benchmarks. There's been a working group in the Storage Networking Industry Association, SNIA. There's a SIFS working group, and one of the tasks of that working group is to create a benchmark that all the SIFS vendors can agree on. Right now, everybody tends to use Ziff Davis NetBench, which is a proprietary benchmark. Nobody really knows how it works, and it uses Windows clients, which means it's very expensive to run, as Andrew and John mentioned, very time-intensive, and also you can't look at the code, so you don't really know what it's doing. So there's been a big effort to get a standard SIFS benchmark, a little bit like the NFS benchmark, SpecFS. So Richard Sharp has actually been converting libSMB client into a benchmark driving tool, and he posted it, I think, yesterday. So what we're hoping is that the SNIA SIFS group will standardize on that, and at that point, everybody will have an open source benchmarking tool that they can use, and this thing will run against, you know, Windows servers as well as Samba servers as well as any other SIFS vendor appliance servers. So we can use that to have a completely comparative benchmark that you can run without having to have 200 Windows clients, which is, you know, the main problem of running NetBench isn't the servers. Putting the servers together is easy. It's having a test lab, automated lab, with like 60 or more Windows clients. So the SIFS benchmarking world should be getting a little bit better over the next few months. Sorry, thanks. Sorry.
Good. Any questions at all?
I have a comment to make about file system issues, if you don't mind. We did a comparison of file systems, including SGI XFS. That was pretty long ago. It was during something like November, so the things may have changed since then, but then we found out that on this particular set of tests we also used T-bench, D-bench and N-bench. XFS performed a bit better than RiserFS and X3FS, and best thing about it was that it was a pretty consistent performance, not with as much spikes as RiserFS, for example. Of course, on small files, RiserFS rules, but on anything else, XFS was a better choice. And now we are shipping a product based on XFS, so I think that is ready for production use. Thank you.
I'd like to just relay what Andrew relayed to me yesterday, and that is the NetBench test uses a lot of 8.3 file names, and it falls back on our mangling code quite extensively, which means that you're constantly doing 8.3 to long file name type conversions, which have an exceptionally high overhead in Samba. It's an area that I believe Andrew has in mind to improve.
It has been improved, actually, already.
Yes.
Over the last few weeks, it's been improved a lot.
Good.
I have two questions. First question is, how can the test get 300, 400 megabytes? I think it's something impossible. There was a test for disk, D-Bench, I think, and the results were 300, 400 megabytes. What does this number mean?
Yeah, perhaps I can help the right test so I can explain that. The most common operation in NetBench is something like this. Open, write, close, unlink, delete. So that means the data is written to the server and then immediately deleted and never read later. It never has to go to disk because the operating system on the server deletes the data before it's committed to disk. And that means that you're actually testing, for smaller number of clients, you are testing the performance of the page cache on the server, not the actual disk performance. And that's why you see the dramatic drop-off at larger numbers of clients, because on average, each NetBench client uses a working step size of 22 megabytes. So if you have 1 gigabyte of memory in your machine, then you find that the call log point is a up around the 50 client mark if you tune your page cache appropriately. But the default page cache tuning on Linux starts to push data to disk at 30% full. That means, in fact, that you are only using about 300 megabytes of your page cache, and that means that with 22 megabytes per client, you start falling off at about 15 clients or so before you start dropping rapidly. But yes, the other aspect is you can actually get NBench results across the network much larger than is theoretically possible with 100 megabit networking. That's because of offlogs. Offlogs allow the client to cache data. So in fact, you are measuring partly the CPU and memory speed of your client, not the speed of your server. That's one of the main objections that Sam the team has to the NetBench test, because it is too dependent on the speed of your clients, not the speed of your server, and if the test is supposed to be measuring your server's performance. One of the advantages of the new NBench test in SMB Torture, which is what Richard is using as a basis for his new SIPS benchmark, is that it measures the performance at the server, how much data the server actually serves, rather than how much the clients are internally processing.
Just to add to what you are saying, it will become much more funny than that, because since Linux 2.5 has got an implementation of delayed block allocation, the kernel would not even consider to write the data to disk.
Yep.
So it will become even more powerful on the Linux side.
XFS already has delayed allocation on Linux.
Yeah.
Okay, and second thing, I have spent all yesterday trying to adjust to a very high-end system, which consists of a server running on dual Pentium, I think 1.2 gigahertz, 64-bit PCI, with 7,200 RPM hard disks, running in software RAID, and two clients running also software RAID with Windows, and all connected through the gigabit. And my real environment tests was that each client was able to write on Samba server about 22-25 megabytes per second. But there was a problem that there was one giga Rambus RAM in a server, and when the RAM get exhausted, whole transmit gets stuck for 5 seconds, and there was no transmission on the network, and the clients stopped for the 5 seconds, and then in the run for another 20 seconds and another 5 seconds halt. I would like to ask if there is something what can be done with this halt.
Yes, please.
I really need a lot more information to know about your particular configuration. For example, whether you are RAID 5 or RAID 1 or RAID 0.
It's the same for RAID 5, RAID 0, no RAID.
Okay, RAID 5 would normally do much worse, of course. What type of disk, IDE or SCSI?
It was IDE.
If they're IDE, did you unmask IRQs on the disks?
Andrew, I think we should... Andrew, I think we should discuss that later on the bottom.
Yeah.
Come and see us later.
Yeah. I think we're starting to run out of time a bit if this can be discussed to no end. I would still like to give Igor a second chance. And
thank you, folks.